Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Clint with the Scottish Clans Podcast. I have a treat for you today. Oh, you're going to be so glad you clicked on this episode. I have an interview I did with Dr. Anus McConaughey. Yes, I did find out how to pronounce his name. He said I did it well, and so I've had the chance face-to-face with him now to really learn how to pronounce that name, which is he always signs his papers and his other works in the Gaelic form of his name, which in English would be Angus McKenzie, but that's not how he goes by. It's not how he was raised, and that's not how he professionally identifies himself. So that was really fun to have that, even that tiny little piece of information. And if that was interesting, man, there is so much more that you're going to like, especially if you have any connection to the McKenzies or the McLeods of Lewis. You are really going to enjoy this episode. We have a ton of information here. Some of it you can find with a Google search. A lot of it you cannot. You are going to get the opportunity to learn at the feet of a real expert in this field. So before I turn you over to that discussion that I had with Anus, I want to tell you that this episode is brought to you by USA Kilts. I'm excited. The hiking season's coming, and I can't wait to get out and hike around in my casual kilt from USA Kilts. It is in the McDuff Hunting Tartan. And I have other things that I wear with kilts. I've also had a few occasions recently, more formal occasions, where I wore my 5-yard wool kilt, also from USA Kilts, as well as a few other pieces that I got from them that go with the kilt to complete the whole attire. And I, guess what? To figure out how it's all supposed to go together, to stay away from taboos, make sure I do it right, I went over to their YouTube channel, USA Kilts and Celtic Traditions. And so I recommend that to you as well. Go find them on YouTube for a ton of stuff, not just on how to wear kilts correctly, but also on some Scottish heritage, culture, history. I think you're really going to like it. All right, so here is my discussion with Dr. Anus McConaughey of the University of Glasgow. I had a really enjoyable time with us. He's a splendid human being as well as an esteemed professor and researcher in this field. So without further ado, I am going to turn you over to that discussion.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have with me Anus McConaughey, and he schooled me up on how to say his name before we pressed record, and he's been very, very kind with his indulgence in my attempts to pronounce his name in Gaelic, which is how he signs it on his paper, and when he does in his papers that I've read of his, I have read a lot about him. He's agreed to come on and share some of the things he knows. We're going to be specifically getting into the McLeods of Lewis and the McKenzie clan, which McKenzie is an anglicized version of McConaughey. And so to start off with, though, maybe a lot of my listeners or watchers, depending on what platform they're consuming this on, are not super familiar with you. So Anus, do you mind giving us a little bit of a background on you, where you're from, how you got interested in this, and then maybe a little bit of professional, like where you're teaching now and how you got to be there?
Sure thing, Clinton. Thanks very much for asking me on, and really nice to meet you after having emailed. And my name's Anus McConaughey. My birth certificate and passport actually says Angus McKenzie, but I originally grew up in the Isle of Lewis. My family spoke Gaelic. I never really learned Gaelic in school, and as an adult, I learned to read and write my native language. And as I studied Gaelic initially, and as I went to university, I had always had a sort of interest in history and the sort of environment around me in the Highlands and Islands growing up, the historical environment, but I'd never really given it much thought. And as I went to university and I went through this, I got deeper and deeper into it, I guess, and eventually I did a PhD at Aberdeen on the history of Clan McKenzie. But I wrote it in Gaelic, Yachtri Chlon Chonich. And I've just got kind of sunk deeper and deeper into this sort of web. It's just one of these things that I've kind of, I don't know, I suppose you get drawn to in your life. But I'm currently at the University of Glasgow, and I lecture in Celtic history. And I've got I suppose my special area of interest is the history of the Highland clans and the Gaeltacht or the Gaelic speaking areas of Scotland, Ireland as well to a lesser extent. I don't know as much about Ireland, but I'm interested, of course, really roughly between 1500 and 1750. Why this time period? Well, I, as an undergraduate at Aberdeen, I developed an interest in medieval history, but I got frustrated by the lack of sources. And if you really want any sort of detailed documentary history, sort of insight into what's going on in the Gaeltacht, then you probably about 1500 or the late 15th century is as early as you can go in terms of getting a sustained sort of amount of sources, which allows you to start telling the story.
So in other words, historians like Alex Wolf that covered those earlier time periods, I could imagine how frustrating that is with those, with that lack of sources that you mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, historians who some of these people like Alex Wolf are pretty mathematicians, I think, because they can they can make a few scraps of evidence sit up and talk. And early modernists, that's the sort of historians who cover the later period where we have evidence. we make jokes about medievalists having crystal balls, it's a really, really tough job for anyone looking at the medieval period, particularly in the Highlands. I mean, there are some parts of Scottish history in the medieval period where one can say something, but for the areas who I'm looking at in the north and west of Scotland, you know, you've got some cryptic references in Norse sagas, but there's a real black hole there in terms of documentary evidence. So really, for the area I'm really interested in, but that's the Northwest Highlands of Scotland. 1500 is, you know, there's not a lot there actually. Even in medieval terms, before that, it's a very sparse historical record.
Yeah, I've read a lot of R. Andrew MacDonald's work, yeah, on the Western Seaboard, the Kingdom of the Isles, Outlaws of Medieval Scotland, and there's a lot. When you finish, if you've read through a chapter or so, there are a lot of questions. So you've been able to you chose all the time period that was a little bit later, and I really, now that you say where you're from, I did not know that you were from originally the Isle of Lewis. And I know, and I think we're going to set it up so that you can kind of connect. That wasn't originally Mackenzie territory, but it became Mackenzie territory. Before we get into that interaction with the MacLeods of Lewis and the Mackenzies, can you kind of maybe for especially listeners who don't have a strong academic background specifically in this area, could you give us like a... Wikipedia leaves so much wanting, because that's where a lot of people, they'll Google it. Wikipedia is the first thing that comes up, and there's lots of great things you can do with Wikipedia. It's not, yeah, I don't want to sound too disparaging about it, but it does leave a lot of things wanting. Now, they do sometimes have great references and links to sometimes a free PDF written by a scholar. Could you, on maybe though a Wikipedia level, could you give us a history both of the MacLeods of Lewis and of the Mackenzies, in whatever, not necessarily in that order?
Like you say, some of the Wikipedia entries are great, and some of them are of, you know, of dubious quality, but it varies, I suppose, depending on who's contributed to this. I can certainly talk about the MacLeods. So you mentioned R. Andrew MacDonald's, you know, great work on the Isles, and particularly the MacDonalds, or the people who became the MacDonalds. But even R. Andrew MacDonald further north really doesn't get really much to grips with what's happening in the lands, which are, you know, come to be associated with the MacLeods of Lewis. Well, there are two types of MacLeods, at least two. There are MacLeods of Harris and Dunvegan, and they're on MacLeods of Lewis. So the MacLeods of Harris are known as Shiel Toromach. That means the progeny or the offspring of an ancestor called Toromod. Toromod presumably is the first guy who must have set up this clan. And they will have been related at some point to the MacLeods of Lewis, who are known as Shiel Torkel. That's the name they called themselves in the 16th century. That means the seed or offspring of Torkel. So the MacLeods of Lewis, the Shiel Torkel, diverged from their namesakes, and their two independent clans, at least around the 14th century. Now, what's happening in the 14th century? Well, some of your listeners will have heard of Robert Bruce and the Wars of Independence. So before the Wars of Independence, scholars think that an outfit called the Nicholson clan probably had Lewis. Now, we don't know for sure, and a lot of this is conjecture, but if the Nicholson clan were part of the status quo had opposed Robert Bruce and lost out. In the aftermath of, or as the Wars of the Independence played out in the early 1300s, those clans who had supported King Robert and were on the winning side won big. For example, the MacDonalds in Islay and in the Isles won big, the Campbells won big. And further north, a question worth asking is this: why the MacLeods emerged in Lewis? Because the first crown charter to a MacLeod, a MacLeod of Lewis, is to one of the chiefs of MacLeod in 1343, granting them the lands of Assent in what's now Western Sutherland. So that's the first historical fix on Clan MacLeod. So a lot of the 14th century is really, really murky in terms of documentary evidence, but they emerge as a force during this period is known as the Lordship of the Isles. So these MacDonald lords based in Islay extend their sway all across the Isles, up to the north of Lewis, all the way down south to Islay and Kintyre. And underneath this canopy of lordship, you get a number of clans forming, such as MacNeill's Barra. You have both branches of the MacLeods who look up to the Lords of the Isles as their masters, immediate masters. And in fact, the earliest charter that seems to have been we know to have been granted to a MacLeod of Lewis was by Alexander MacDonald, Lord of the Isles at Finlaggan in Islay in 1432. So this was a grant to Malcolm MacLeod of Lewis. Now, the only reason we know there are various genealogies of later genealogies, many of them actually held in Ireland of the MacLeods. But in terms of it's really hard to pin dates or anything to these genealogies. But this charter grant to the MacLeods survives only in an inventory or a list of the actual charters themselves, which had been taken for safekeeping by the Mackenzies in the 1580s. So the Mackenzies kept a note of what charters the MacLeods had. These later got destroyed by fire. But from this note, we know that at least as early as 1432, they were holding lands of the lordship, the MacDonald Lordship of the Isles, and they continued to do so up until the Lordship of the Isles was suppressed by King James IV in 1493. Now, James IV tried to establish precedence or authority over the Lordship of the Isles from 1493 with mixed results, it's fair to say. One of the infant son or claimant of the Lords of the Isles, Doldu or Blackhair Donald, born in captivity, imprisoned for safekeeping by his Campbell Campbell relations, was sprung out of jail in 1504. What did he do? He went north to see his uncle, Torquil of MacLeod of Lewis. And there was a major rising in 1505. And eventually the king sent Campbell of Argyll and various other nobles, and they shelled Stornoway Castle in 1505, 1506, and reduced it to rubble. Torquil thereafter disappears. So there we have the first sort of major rebellion against the crown involving a MacLeod of Lewis.
Now, is the Stornoway Castle, was that the primary stronghold of the MacLeods of Lewis?
Oh, yes, that's right. Stornoway Castle was the caput or main focus of the lordship of the MacLeods of Lewis. The first thing I should say as well is we think about Lewis, excuse me, sorry. Will I silence this?
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
I had the lights shut off in the room that I'm in. They timed out. There wasn't enough movement. And it's no these.
Stop saying.
This is no problem. We can edit out all this stuff. This is not an issue. If somebody happens to walk into the room that I'm in, it's all that stuff out.
I can. It was my wife. So I'll talk to her later.
It's important.
Well, yeah, of course, but yeah, we'll catch up soon enough. Yeah. So where were we? Yes, sorry, before I was
interrupted. I just asked you about Stornoway Castle, and you said, yeah, that was the headquarters or the caput of the MacLeods of Lewis, but then it kind of got you thinking about maybe we should say something.
Right, yeah, okay. So, yes, Stornoway Castle was the sort of centre or the administrative centre of the MacLeod Lordship of Lewis. But it's important to remember that the MacLeod Lordship of Lewis didn't just consist of Lewis, but it consisted of Vaternish in Skye, just across a district of Skye. It consisted of the island of Rasay, and it consisted of lands on the western coast of the Scottish mainland, such as Assent, Coedioch, and Gearloch too. So if you can imagine a map of the northwestern corner, the MacLeods of Lewis controlled not only the coast of Lewis, but also the adjacent Scottish coastline as well. So quite a big area, and they were an area where maritime communications were extremely important.
And we see them establishing branches in those areas you mentioned, right? Like the MacLeods of Rasay, the MacLeods of Assent. There was some a little farther north. I'm not exactly sure on the pronunciation. It starts with an E, and they interacted with
Edrachulish. Yes.
Say that again, please.
Edrachulish.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. It just means the name means Adr Dachulis. It just means in between two narrow straits.
Okay.
That's what the name means.
Thank you. And they interacted a lot with the Mackays, didn't they? Had some going back and forth.
Yes. Yes. Of course. I mean, the Mackays were their neighbors, and latterly, when the MacLeods of Lewis suffered an extinction-level event from, by 1610, some lands got taken over by the Mackenzies, a lot of lands, but Edrachulis got taken over by the Mackays. Actually, now that you asked that. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, by the early 16th century, MacLeods had been a major rebellion. The MacLeods of Lewis slowly rebuilt after that. By the 1540s, they were in trouble again with the crown. Another King James called James V, came all the way round in a naval expedition and kidnapped a bunch of chiefs and with the aim of trying to enforce them to comply. One of the things he did then was to install Mackenzie in the area as a royal tax collector. Mm. Now the revenue collection arm of the Scottish government is known as the record of this is known as the Exchequer Rolls. And in the margin of the Exchequer Rolls from the 1540s, a perplexed royal clerk enters the word the North Isles, beside this place, Skye, this clerk had never seen Sky paying revenue before. So the Mackenzies were installed as tax collectors, essentially, for the crown. And what was the result of this? It triggered a major rebellion in 1540. People didn't like it being shaken down for tax, especially if they weren't getting any benefits back. It's okay to pay tax if you're getting something back, but that's the deal, hey? So Stuart rule wasn't well-liked. And you will remember I mentioned Dole Dhu, who was black-haired Donald, who'd broken out briefly as a teenager with his uncle, MacLeod O'Lewis. Well, he broke out of jail again in 1545. And again, Dole Dhu was a lightning rod for a lot of supporters in Western Isles who were really drawn to a MacDonald claimant for the reinstatement of the Lordship of the Isles. Amongst them was Ruaidhrí MacLeod O'Lewis. And for the next decade, Ruaidhrí MacLeod O'Lewis is really someone who is at variance with the Scottish government. But by the reign of Mary in 1560, when Mary Queen of Scots assumes personal monarchy, personal reign, she reaches out to Ruaidhrí MacLeod's heir, Torkel Eire. I do a beg your pardon. Torkel Eire is so called because he's Torkel the heir. And Mary wanted to work with this MacLeod heir. At this point, I might stop and go back a bit, if that makes sense.
Feel free, yeah.
Yeah, because we're about to enter the murky realm of MacLeod marriages. Oh, I mean, Game of Thrones have nothing on this gang. Yeah. They really are wild.
I did read your paper on this as well, and not like in preparation for this. It was maybe, I don't know, within the last year I've read it, but it's amazing. It's like saying, yeah, comparing to the Game of Thrones doesn't even do it justice. It did.
Yeah.
He has these different, and then they're the different sons are by the same, or they have the same name. Like you have more than one Torkel. Like how confusing can we make this? Torkels.
Yeah, you see that's the brand name, that's the clan brand name, Torkel.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put
it. The old chief comes to the chiefship, and he wants to establish his line as Shield Torkel. That's clearly very important to him. So he calls his eldest son. I think it's kind of a shotgun marriage in probably about 1538. When Mackenzie's acting as a crown policeman in the Isles, young Ruaidhrí MacLeod of Lewis, who's not that young probably, he must be approaching 30, is probably, I don't know if he's forced to marry a Mackenzie woman. We're not sure about her name, but she's well connected with the chief of Mackenzie, and from that marriage, he has a son, Torkel Conanoch. He's called Conanoch because he's fostered with his mother's kin in Mackenzie's in Strathconan. But when he comes of age, he doesn't seem to have got on with his father. However, his Mackenzie kinsmen use Torkel as a sort of battering ram to annoy the MacLeods with. The first thing they do in 1554 is Torkel Conanoch must be a teenager, is they basically take over the MacLeod lands in Cogioch. That's in the area where you catch the ferry to Lewis nowadays. It's at Ullapool and Westeros. So that area, Cogioch, is sort of grabbed by the MacLeods from the 1550s. And they continue to hold it. Increasingly, it's Mackenzie, becomes assimilated into Mackenzie lands. One of the other parts of the Mackenzie lands, of MacLeod lands, that's Assint just to the north, starts to come under Mackenzie pressure as well. So Torkel Conanoch then is the teenage son. He grows up really at variance. He was himself and his father seem to have hated each other. Torkel Conanoch's mother had been had apparently run away with someone else. And Rory, who knows, he seems to have fathered a whole brood of bastards. So he doesn't sound like the ideal father in any case. So old Rory MacLeod of Lewis. So what did he do after his marriage with his first Mackenzie wife broke down? He married Barbara Stewart, who's a cousin of the king. So he married Barbara probably sometime in the early 1540s. So she was an Orcadian woman, or at least raised in Orkney, of Stuart blood. And then when Queen Mary came to the throne in 1563, Queen Mary had a very short active reign. But when she's actually ruling, Queen Mary is actually quite an engaged monarch, hands-on monarch. She gallops about to Inverary, to Inverness, and so on. And it's while at Inverary that she writes in 1563, north to Stornoway, to Torkel Eire MacLeod, that's the young heir of Torkel MacLeod, asking him not to marry because he's of Stuart blood. So the crown wants to work with the MacLeods in 1563. The crown actually thinks that the MacLeods are someone who can be brought on side, can be made to work with. And at this point, there's no hint of them being barbarous or uncivil, as is the case in the reign of James.
And that's what that made me think about, was the contrast with how James describes them as just They're irredeemable.
Absolutely. Well, that's right, yeah. And in this period too, sometime between 1560 and 1590, the MacLeods themselves don't see themselves as being fundamentally opposed to the Scottish body politic. They actually register coats of arms. They invest in, you know, it's the new, I suppose, if you think of Elon Musk and his redesigning of Twitter as X. Guys are very image conscious, so they get coats of arms commissioned, and they get the coats of arms. They have to be registered with the Lord Lyon, and the MacLeods do this.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation here with Dr. McConaughey and give a shout out to my sponsor, USA Kilts. Hey, the season is coming up for Scottish festivals and Highland games, for getting out and about and being in the outdoors. And for all of those occasions, a kilt is an awesome thing to wear. So go over to usakilts.com and find yourself either a kilt or something else to express your connection to Scotland, whether it's just interest or whether you have some family ties. Go over there to usakilts.com and get yourself something. And if you have any questions about how to wear that, go over to the YouTube channel, USA Kilts and Celtic Traditions, and find out exactly how to put it all together, or go find the history of those things. Maybe some interviews with awesome people from Scotland and get their perspectives. They've got it all on their channel. If you have a desire to express that connection to Scotland and to have an interaction with some quality customer service, then go over to usakilts.com and get yourself something. While you're over at YouTube trying to figure out how to wear the kilt properly, I also have a YouTube channel that I'm starting to flesh out there, and it is not in competition with, but complementary to USA Kilts and Celtic Traditions. I am taking a lot of my material from podcasts and adding visual aids to it, and I know a lot of you kind of feel lost because you don't have a map of Scotland memorized, and so some of them I'm just taking podcast material and putting visual aids to them. Others I've created specifically for YouTube, as though I were having a lesson and a slideshow with all of my graphics there. And so it's created from the start with YouTube in mind. Either way, go check it out at Scottish Clans on YouTube. And now back to my conversation with Dr. McConaughey.
So in the 1560s, 1560 up to 1566, everything's going well. Okay, you've got some discontented Mackenzies over to the east. You've got a discontented and disinherited Torkel Cononoff because the old man doesn't want anything to know about him. The blue-eyed boy is the son from the second marriage, Torkel Eire. Torkel Eire is a Stuart mother, and he's going to inherit everything. He's going to take a lot, except that he's going back from Skye to Stornoway in 1566, and he's caught in a storm, and his birling founders with all hands. So he drowns. Then what then? So there's a succession crisis. The Mackenzies, of course, have their stalking horse, and they start rubbing their hands, trying to press their claim for the MacLeod lordship. Other contenders, the MacDonalds of Sleat, have a distant claim, not really a good claim, but they try and make trouble nonetheless. So old Ruadi by this time must be approaching 70. So they think he's just a daft old man, he's not going to live long. But what does he do? He marries again for a third time. And the woman he marries is, I mean, she's been married before, she's an older lady, probably with an older lady and a guy who must be in his early 70s. They think, oh, well, I mean, that's it, you know. But they have two children. They have at least two legitimate male children. Wow. So that sets the cat amongst the pigeons. So you've got Torquil Dhu and his younger brother, Taramod, are young, legitimate male heirs to the MacLeod inheritance. Of course, over to the east, Torquil Conanoch and his Mackenzie backers are busy plotting and hoping and certainly wishing them ill, I think.
You're right. I don't know why we even need to make anything up. I mean, maybe just for the pure joy of creating, but the stories are already there. Like this is crazy enough that you could make a fantastic series.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just on this story. So something that there's a few questions that came up to my mind.
Sure.
As you taught us through there. One was, this kind of goes way back to the beginning. the Sheol Tormij and Sheol Torquil, do they take a quite independent trajectory from each other? Or do they, to what degree do they see each other as cousins? There's never, that I know of, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's never a chief. Like there is like the Lord of the Isles that united all of the branches of the MacDonalds. The MacLeods don't have that similar role between these two major branches of the MacLeods. Is that correct?
That's correct. But at various times, they do work quite closely with each other. In 1510, after the MacLeod rising in support of Dáil Dhu, the Crown installs Alistair Crotoch of Dunvegan, Alistair MacLeod of Dunvegan, and that's Sheol Toromach, in charge as a viceroy temporarily over MacLeod O'Lewis lands. Now, that doesn't last. On and off, they seem to have been amicable, but they're not joined. They're independent entities. But certainly later in the 16th century, I think during the chiefship of Ruadi Mór, MacLeod of Harris and Dunvegan, he's really the chief between 1595 and 1626. But in the early years of his chiefship, there seem to have been really good, really close links. Ruadi Mór's sister is married to Torquil Dhu of Lewis.
Okay.
But both lordships remain distinct.
Okay. Now they this I'm going to push a little bit into mythology here and the fairy flag. Is that because it's a big deal in the lore of the is it a big deal to the MacLeods of Lewis and those of Harris and Dunvegan?
The flag.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I rather suspect, and I'm flying a kite here, Clint. I really don't know.
I know. I kind of came that sideways.
I rather suspect that the happy survival of the flag, in itself generates stories.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yes.
Having said that, I've just come across a hitherto unremarked Clan Mackay poem from 1614. Which actually is all about Nimbratich or the flags. So are these battle flags? Are these battle pennants? So yeah, and with respect to the little people, I'm not sure it's necessarily connected to the fairies per se. There are various stories surrounding the flag, and I'm actually not that well up on them. There are even stories that it came from the Middle East, which isn't necessarily outlandish because some of these people went on crusade. So
Yeah,
why not?
yes, absolutely. And I didn't, I think that question, that was a very spur of the moment question, but it grew out of the degree to which these two branches are connected. Does it go so far as to share some of the lore? Is there Pan MacLeod lore and not just a common ancestor way back? But it was just kind of a spur of the moment question. Another
Yeah,
question I
no, it's a
had.
fair question, but I don't think there is really. I mean, they are
Okay.
quite distinct entities, but quite close to, but they are distinct nonetheless. But they often work in concert.
Thank you for answering that. The another question I had was, you mentioned that as we go way back, and I don't mean to spend too much time here because it is prior to where the bulk of this conversation should stay, but I am fascinated with these earlier kindreds, and this I think this will also be relevant to the Mackenzies as well. But these are, like you mentioned, the Nicholsons, and there's a couple things I'm interested in. So you have this earlier kindred, and it's tied up a lot in some of the things. I think Ronald Black gets into that this era, these origins, maybe even Seller gets into these earlier time periods where these kindreds, as we recognize them today, but they're coming out of earlier kindreds.
Oh, yes.
There were earlier entities, and they kind of in the histories, except in the very most academic scholarly circles, they kind of get sloughed off and not really mentioned that much. So you have the Nicholsons, or now to what degree? I know, like in a Scandinavian context, Nicholson might be the way to say it. But they would become the MacNichols in a Gaelic context. They were a big deal. It also reminds me of, okay, so you have with the guns, you have a sept of them that are called Wilson. You have Nielsens with the Mackays. And I always find it interesting to see the use of this, what at first glance might be a more anglicized version, because in that respect, the English and the Scandinavians are similar with that, the way we say those surnames. Is it really a Scandinavian influence? Why would you see Wilson, Nielsen, Nicholson pop up in a very Gaelic context?
Well, yeah, that the answer to that, I think, is certainly for the MacLeods of Assynt, where you have Nielsen as a name. Yeah, it is kind of curious, but I think it shows the, I mean, these are all Gaelic speakers, right? But their admin. All their admin is in Scots,
Okay.
in English.
So it's a lot of
So
the way it's being recorded.
I think that's got a lot to do with it. I do
Okay.
think so. If you'd been a fly on the wall amongst Clangun or amongst the MacLeods of Assynt, I don't think they'd have been calling themselves Nielsen.
Okay.
I think they'd have been calling themselves MacNeil rather
Okay.
than Nielsen.
Gotcha. That's good to know.
Yeah, and I think I put money on that, but I'm not sure I could prove it that
No,
easily. But yeah, but I think so. I think that would be the case.
I'll defer to your expertise on that.
Yeah.
So kind of maybe shifting, we've seen how the I think you've done a good job of bringing up the MacLeods from their origins and following the trail of MacLeod of Lewis and various branches, and we see the Mackenzies become involved here, first as tax collectors for the crown, and then later with intermarriage, and then with a more ambitious view. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, that's an excellent summary. Yeah, and see the Mackenzies they're a clan on the make. They're one of the later clans to actually emerge blinking into the light of history. There's a whole and part, you know, and it's actually a complete nonsense. They have an idea being developed at some point in the 17th century that they're descended of a Colin Fitzgerald who comes over from Ireland and saves the king. So this is the thing, this is the motif that they're trying to create. They save the king. Colin Fitzgerald in 1263 saves the king and gets granted a charter. Hurrah! So remember that. He's got a charter in 1263 off the king. So for the more suspiciously minded amongst us, there are some problems with this. Not least that the only person who's ever been able to find any evidence, I've got evidence in inverted commas, on this is George Mackenzie of Tarbert, who becomes first Earl of Cromarty. Now, so what do I think is happening then? Well, I'm not a big fan of unsubstantiated legends. It doesn't mean that they should be disregarded, but unless you've got corroborating evidence, there's so much distortion. It's possible that they should be treated with extreme caution,
especially when everybody's ancestors saved the king, right? Isn't that, it's like a trope?
Oh well, it is kind of a trope, but usually, I mean, it's not usually as brazenly brazenly advanced as this. Gotcha. To be fair to George Mackenzie in the later 17th century, and he might not have been the author of this, he's just the most erudite exponent of it. But why might the Mackenzies be seeking for an origin myth? And the Campbells and various other clans all have origin myths too. They might not actually know themselves, or it might be so vague. And, you know, B, there's an element of spin. It's all about presentation and building your corporate image up. Yeah. And these clans they're like corporations in some respects. You know, they're each jostling their elbows, trying to succeed. So this is the official story of being put out by Clan Mackenzie. However, taking a historical approach to these things, one finds in the Mackenzie papers an inventory, the earliest document they have in 1626, and that's in the Mackenzie of Kintail Charter Chest in 1626. The earliest document they have is 1463. And who do they have this charter from? Is it the Crown? No, it's from MacDonald, Lord of the Isles and Earl of Ross. So let's rewind that back. They say they're descended from fictional Colin Fitzgerald. There might have been a Colin, but very unlikely he'd have been called Fitzgerald. But never mind that. But certainly the guy who's the first bona fide man on record as a chief of Clan Mackenzie is Alexander Mackenzie of Kintail from around 1430. He dies sometime at the end of the 1460s. So that's the earliest chief. He's a chief serving the Clan Donald, not the Crown. Now remember what happened to Clan Donald. Clan Donald got busted by the Crown. They got kicked out of Ross, they got kicked out of the Isles, and the MacDonald Lordship of the Isles fragments. There are attempts to resuscitate it, but against this, the Crown power expands. Now, what do the Crown do? The Crown needs someone on the ground in Rossshire who's going to do their dirty work for them, because the Crown take Ross, and Ross is granted to the younger sons as a title to the younger sons of the king from then on. So and Ross and the Ardmannoch or the Black Isle becomes a royal appanage. So this isn't just a paper thing, but to make this good, The rich farmland in East Aross, it's really good farmland, and there's wild, rocky, mountainous highlands in the west. So the eastern lands are, keenly contested over. But in order to make this good, they've got to get a hold of the highlands. And by doing that, they cultivate Clan Mackenzie. So the Crown and the Clan Mackenzie form a symbiotic relationship all through the 16th century. Then, in fact, there are times during the 16th century where the Mackenzies literally get away with murder. Well, maybe not quite murder, but probably actually they do. Certainly, at some points, the Mackenzies are pursued through the courts by various plaintiffs, and at least two occasions, the Crown actually intervene and stop them pursuing the Mackenzies. So the Mackenzies are important for the Crown. And during the course of the 16th century, they have a meteoric rise. They rise from a really small kindred. They're installed by the Crown in the barony of Ellandonan Castle. And from there, that's the caput for the Mackenzie lordship in Ross. And gradually they extend their power east. Mackenzie tentacles are expanding in all directions. And you can really chart the rise in the Privy Council Register. Now, the Privy Council Register from 1545 is the sort of it's the executive body of government. I mean, you've got a king, right, and you've got a parliament, but the Privy Council's where all the action happens, and it's got quite a good record. And it's got a litany, a list of complaints from all these people in Rossshire against these Mackenzies. These Mackenzies are roughing us up. These Mackenzies are taking our lands. These Mackenzies have stolen our cows. And so it goes on. And Mackenzies encroaching on lands. By the end of the 1590s, it's too late for anyone to complain to the Privy Council. Mackenzie's on the Privy Council.
So they kind of remind me, you did, if the origin myth idea, you compare them to the Campbells. It seems like the parallels continue as far as being the crown agents in that part. And as they hitch their horse to that wagon or that wagon to that horse, they rise, they dominate in their respective spheres because of that coziness with the crown, which it seems like some other clans disparage that kind of relationship. I know some of that is propaganda. This antithesis to the crown, as you pointed out with the MacLeods, during certain chiefs they were very friendly with the crown, but with this policy, a general policy between the Campbells and the crown, similar with the Mackenzies and the crown, they do seem to rise pretty quickly.
And that's true. I mean, the Campbells are earlier, and the Campbells have a well-honed instinct for survival. The Campbells are masters of the royal household. I mean, the Campbells are really at, they're Premier League, even in the 15th century. This
Early.
continued, early and late, and later on, beyond the period we're going to be talking about, the Campbells might have risen to power in Stuart service, but they were they might have had a sixth sense about when to jump off that wagon too. Whereas the Mackenzies stayed with the Stuarts and went down with the Stuarts after during the Jacobite period. But that's to go later though. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right, and I don't think it's that the other clans were, were necessarily not switched on to all of this. But it's about the haves and have-nots. So the Mackenzies had it, and they made sure that no one else got it. So this sort of relationship is really good for the Crowns, very good for the Mackenzies. So the Mackenzies, they don't want anyone else getting in the act. They want to keep their place. So there's all these sort of all these maneuvers to be considered as well, I think.
Wow, so they, if I understood you correctly, they Kintail is the homeland of the Mackenzies, and as they become as the central government, as the crown, needs somebody in that region to act on their behalf because it's so remote from where the throne is, they empower the Mackenzies, who grab that agency and run with it, and yes. spread their influence eastward.
Yeah, they spread their influence eastwards into the rich lands of Easterros. It's rich lowland, okay. farmland, great land. So first of all, they do over. I mean, the other thing is the Reformation. So there's an unseemly scramble among the Scottish nobility for all the church lands in the Reformation, you know. So yeah. and the Mackenzies are, they have some of the sharpest elbows in Ross, right? So they have a long running feud with the Clan Munro, and run out winners eventually. But they also, you know, a lot of the lesser kindreds feel the heat of Mackenzie expansion as well. And in the West, they're expanding at the expense of the MacDonalds of Glengarry. So the MacDonalds of Glengarry have lands in Loch Alsh and Loch Carron, you know, where Strome Castle is, just across from Skye, just right. north of Ellandonan. So, and by 16, it's one of these unreported wars, but by 1604, the MacDonalds of Glengarry were tanked, the Mackenzies.
Really?
Successfully besieged their castle, and when they got Strome Castle, they blew it up, so the MacDonalds would never again be able to hold it against them.
Gotcha. Those inter-clan relationships, whether alliances or whether in this case a feud, are I think they, once again, I think I really at my core I'm in it for the good story, and I want those stories to be founded on solid information. Because I appreciate some of the creativity that's gone on over the years, but I don't think that you need to make up stuff to have great stories, because this right here, what you just shared, this antagonism, this how the saga of how they spread and come to dominate, and then who that brings them into conflict with, and they take a castle from another group and then just blow it up so nobody gets to use it for an advantage.
I don't have the details of the story, but there's a great story too about how someone inside the castle betrays them, and you know there is more. There are really detailed clan histories written around the 1660s, which give all this sort of dirt. You know, the nitty gritty about. And I can actually share some of these with you. They're freely available on the Internet Archive. They're the one's The Evil Troubles of the Lewis, it's called. It's written by a disaffected member of the MacLeod clan, and it's published in the Scottish History Society volume. And the other one is A History of the Clan Mackenzie, written by one of the Mackenzies in the 1660s. The language is kind of old-fashioned. It's hard work, and if you're not used to it, some of my students find it tough, you know, but it's really worth persevering with if you're interested, because it does have this wealth of story. You know, even the story about how old Ruaidhe MacLeod of Lewis, you know, we mentioned Torquil Conanoch and how he hated Torquil Conanoch. Well, Torquil Conanoch had a son, Ian or John. Torquil Conanoch might have hated his son, but he got out on really well with his grandson, Ian, young Ian MacTorquil. So young Ian MacTorquil is in Stornoway Castle with his grandfather, 1570s. He hears that, there are a bunch of swans out in this loch just a couple of miles to the west. Let's go out hunting. So off he went hunting. What he didn't realize was that this was an ambush. And some of these wicked half-brothers, or legitimate half-uncles or whatever, had laid a snare for him, and they actually, you know, ambushed him. So you've got little things like that. And you've got, you've got little vignettes like that. I completely agree with what you said earlier. I don't want to do down fiction. I'm a big fan of fiction, but really, I mean, the truth, if you were to stick to... What we do know, I mean, some great yarns there. Hollywood, are you listening?
Yeah. I really would love to see some of these things with a Hollywood type capacity behind it. And we do have, you know, it's not this specific in this area, but you have Outlaw King, which was.
Oh yeah, that's a good film, by the way. Yeah,
had some. Yes, I really enjoyed it, and it had some A-list actors in it, and yeah. And it was they cleaned up a lot of the things that Braveheart was criticized for, and Braveheart was still a great story. It was still
I liked Braveheart. It was great, but yeah, those. I mean, why have a Battle of Stirling Field, you know,
instead of Stirling Bridge? You know,
yeah. I mean, why have this thing with a with a queen, and yeah, I mean,
yeah, if you're doing that kind of budget,
you don't need to invent that stuff,
right?
Who am I to tell a movie maker this business, because he made a lot of money.
He did, but if he'd have known better, he would have come and grabbed you as a consultant.
Well, or someone like me, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I know some colleagues who are very good at that, water independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am going to stop this part of the conversation right there. So this is going to be part one of two. I'm going to publish both parts at the same time. I'm just breaking them down into more consumable sizes so that you can listen to this one. And then there's no lag time, no waiting for the next part to come out. You can just push right on over to part two and dig into that part of it as well. I had such a good time visiting with Dr. McConaughey and just feasted on his account of the McLeods, of Lewis and their origins and their rise to power, and as well as the Mackenzies as they start out and then rise up, and as the histories of these two clans merge. And there is still more of this wonderful story to come in part two, so go over there and check that out as well. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have any kind of feedback for me, go to thescottishclans@gmail.com. If you want to give me a really in-depth, several of you have, and I'm going to be giving you shout-outs here in the very near future and maybe answering some of your questions there. Also, if you want to give me a review on the platform that you're leaving this on, especially Apple Podcasts has a great system for that. Leave me hopefully 5 stars. I hope you appreciate me bringing these experts in the field into this. People like Dr. McConaughey know about as much as anybody does on this. Give me some stars. Give me some feedback on there. They do have a spot where you can leave some comments. So do that. I do read them. I promise. And I have read them recently. I've had some great feedback on there. Believe it or not, I have responded well to criticisms I have received in the past. So as long as you're nice about it, just use your manners. And I also want to put out there, like I mentioned earlier, that I do have a YouTube channel. So if you like to see a lot of this stuff with visual aids, I don't have visual aids on all of the things I have on there, but a lot of my content on YouTube, I just took from my podcast episode, added some visual aids to it, and slapped it on YouTube. I do have some content on there that was created specifically for YouTube, and it's got just from the get-go, it's not visual aids that are added to a conversation that happened earlier. It started off with teaching this visually in mind. So go over to YouTube if you have not ever tried that out, and check out the Scottish Clans YouTube channel on there too. I think I've got lots of good content on that. And guys, I have some awesome things to come. I have another conversation with another Scottish professor who is one of Dr. McConaughey's colleagues, actually. And I've got that lined up for you in the future. So stand by and keep an eye out for that. Marsh and Leven Drasta.